everyone, and welcome to A Good Good Thing. I hope you're having a great week full of good things, and if you're not, well, you are in luck, because from here on in, this is a good vibes only space.
It's like super great, so great, so great, yeah.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's episode. Now we have a different type of episode for you today, don't we, Jack?
Yes, we have a good good update.
Jack, tell the people what a good good update is.
I'm glad you knew what it was, because I just kind of coined that phrase on the fly. So we have been making episodes for about half a year now. I think it's half a year. Month is it?
We are in August.
I think we published our first one in March. Which means we are, it's really bad. This shows the amount of research. How many episodes have we done? 8?
This is 9.
So this is our
might be 10. This is 9, I think.
This is our 10th.
I told you.
Okay. So we've done 10. Oh, we've done 9 episodes. This is our 10th episode. And so we thought it'd be good to look back about the progress of what has happened with the good fields that we previously looked at. Because often when you hear these good, good stories, you're like, okay, that's nice, but does anything then happen? Like you always see in newspapers, oh, they found this cure for cancer, and then you never hear about that story again, and it kind of gets swept under the rug. So we thought we'd spend some time to look back to see if the good, good things had continued to be good, good, see if they got good, gooder, or to see if they just good, goodn't.
I'm good, gooder is going to be my new favorite term. So what's up first?
So, I'm going chronologically.
Helpful.
Yes. So, our first ever episode was Fighting Food Waste, Feeding People. Do you remember what that was about?
It was about Food Cycle.
Yes.
I remember it very well.
Yes. Can you give a brief summary?
Yeah. So, Food Cycle is a charity that I volunteer with. It's a really great charity in London that fights food waste and supports local communities. They collect surplus food from businesses and cook up meals for local people at risk of social isolation.
So, it is still doing all of that.
Great. I also know that because I was with them last week.
Okay. How are they doing?
They're doing very well.
Excellent. Thank you, Food Cycle. It's now up to 40 projects running across the country. So, people choose locations where they decide to run these food cycle style projects. And there are now 40 of them. And you can, if you're really interested, if you're really passionate, if you have space available, you can set up one of these food cycle projects in your local area. To make that 41, because we have one listener, so. or higher than 41. Other updates about Food Cycle, which I don't think we touched on the first time, is that they're also doing more specialized events. So they're doing lots of like Food Cycle evenings with immigrants, or specifically immigrant mothers who have maybe come from, maybe they're asylum seekers, maybe they've come from places where they've moved here for a better standard of living, and it's difficult to get started in a new country, a new setup where you don't know many people. A typical kind of evening for them is where 6 or 7 volunteers feed about 50 to 100 people. So we've kind of got a good idea of how much, if people actually go out and volunteer, how many people you can help. Like that's a 1-to-10 ratio, which is pretty nice. I got some statistics about how many people they feed per week. So on average, they feed about 1,500 people every week that wouldn't have this quality meal if it wasn't for Food Cycle.
Yeah, and it's always a 3-course meal as well. So it's never just a throwaway idea. Like there's a lot of time and care put into it, especially when you don't even know necessarily what food you're going to get. They do provide quite a lot.
Yeah, so it's going from strength to strength. It's expanded this year. More sites, feeding people. Food Cycle is cycling food.
Cycling up. Maybe that works.
None of that works.
No. That's good. That's great news. What else have we got?
So, next was the Ozone Avengers.
So, I liked this one because I felt like this was a real example of how we can make change on a global scale when everyone's on the same page.
Yes. And also, it was a great story with like the Ozone Defense Team. That's not their official title. Should be. And it had like a real, like, you know, positive working together outcome, and then like a mystery at the end, like what is happening with the CFC pollutants that are coming out of China? And we left you hanging for like 5 months, but now we can tell you.
So what has been happening?
Okay. So there was pressure on China, from international scientists and the international community, because there was CFC producers, and CFC breaks down ozone and the ozone layer, coming from within China. So there were mysterious factories. Since then, China has agreed to build their own monitoring network or expand their environmental monitoring network. So they're going to study their own CFC production chemicals. They have arrested a bunch of people. They've shut down a bunch of factories.
They've arrested people?
Yep. They've made new legislation to increase fines for people caught putting out CFCs. What else have they done? They have seized 114 tons of CFC-producing chemicals, but the study, which says that China is producing CFCs, companies in China are producing CFCs, says that around 7,000 were going out per year, 7,000 tons. So they may have got 114, but there's still a lot more to get. So China has made some positive steps towards helping the ozone avengers take down the CFC polluters.
That's very good news. So I know what's coming up next. So next is is the episode on community clothing. So this is actually one of our most popular episodes. And this is on a brand, called Community Clothing, which is a UK-based, UK-made clothing brand that is a social enterprise and helps fill factory hours and support workers that would be out of contract off season.
Yes.
So how are they doing?
So they are difficult to find out how they're doing, but I have some information. One is they were running a pop-up store in London last month.
They were. I went.
Oh, good. How was it?
It was good. I bought some stuff.
Excellent.
I got a jacket. I got some socks.
Congratulations on supporting community clothing. You're really living your truths.
Yeah. Well, I don't just say it for saying its sake.
Well, I've stopped putting out CFCs into the atmosphere personally.
Congratulations, Jack.
Yep. So I got a stat update from Community Clothing.
Okay.
So as of 5 weeks ago, they have created over 124,202 person hours of skilled work in UK factories, which equates to 68 years of employment.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, so those jobs just wouldn't exist if Community Clothing hadn't come along and been like, we're going to change how clothing is done in the UK.
And their clothing is just getting better and better as well. So everyone's also looking better, which is great.
That's the most important thing.
Exactly. What's next? What was our next episode?
Oh, take a guess.
It was... Was it yours? It was the VR one?
It was.
Boom.
Virtual reality, real benefits.
Can I just remember doing like the good update times 100? And I'm like, not going to remember the episodes.
I was already like that with this one. I was like, what came after or before the ozone episode? Because that was my favorite episode. Yeah. All of your episodes are my favorite episodes.
Mm-hmm. What's going on in VR?
So lots is going on in VR. More every month. Tens, hundreds more reports come in about people going, we've used VR for this, and it was successful. But I would say the most significant is in pain relief in hospitals. So they're finding that when you put someone in a virtual reality headset and they have chronic pain or immediate pain from, like, say, changing their bandages, that they report lower pain scales because they're immersed and distracted by the virtual environment so well. So, for example, they did this recent study, got a few hundred people, got them to rate their pain out of 1 to 10. You know what that's like in a hospital.
Yeah.
And then you'll say like 9 and they'll be like, okay, 6.
Yeah.
So they would rate their pain scores. Then they went into virtual reality, had the same procedure done, would rate their pain scores. And there was a reported drop of 0.5 on average. So pain reduced significantly, statistically significantly. But for people who had severe pain, really chronic pain, it dropped by up to 3 points, which
wow.
is really big, because like 9 is like the worst pain I've ever been in. And 6 is supposed to be like, I think I've broken my ankle, but I'm walking on it. So that's a big kind of drop down between those.
That's a huge drop.
Yes, they really feel like for people with ongoing chronic pain, virtual reality can be used to help manage these conditions.
Very cool.
Yeah, didn't exist before. And they compared it to television, like watching television while dealing with pain, and they found it was up to 4 times more effective.
All right, everyone go out and buy a VR set.
Yeah, take that television.
Yeah.
Get in the past. Okay, next.
I don't know what next is. Oh,
that's funny, because I think this was your episode.
Oh, this is... Was it the... Oh, that was a bit of a long pause. Is it the Extinction Rebellion one? So when we were looking at countries?
It is. How to succeed at saving the planet.
Yes. So who's saving the planet, Jack? Tell us the update.
Well, Greta, for one, your best friend, is in the news a lot.
Greta is going from strength to strength. I love that girl. Who actually, as we speak, she is traversing the Atlantic Ocean on a boat to get to a summit in New York because she doesn't fly because of the effects on the planet. And a sailing crew offered to give her a space on board their boat. And she went out from, I want to say, Plymouth?
It was Plymouth.
Plymouth. And yeah, so she'll be on her way at the moment. She's also currently the cover star of GQ this month, UK GQ, which is great. A hilarious amount of backlash from a bunch of misogynist douchebags. But it's a really good article. And actually the first time I bought GQ in ages. So well done, Greta.
Wow, that's she's doing her bit for men's fashion writing.
Yeah.
That's Greta Thunberg, by the way.
Yeah.
The environmental rights campaigner, who is really amazing. I'm a big fan. So it's difficult to put anything down to, say, Extinction Rebellion. Like, there's a big, wider, broader movement and softer consensus about what climate change is doing to our planet. So I've picked out just one update story of kind of about the pressure that climate activists have put on and some of the results they can get. So Goldsmiths University have recently announced, after long discussions with the students' union, have been putting pressure on them to be like, reduce your emissions, reduce your plastic use, do things which help the environment. And Goldsmiths University have agreed to a range of sweeping measures, such as no longer selling beef on campus, because beef is the biggest polluter by about 20 times in terms of agricultural food production and the emissions that come with it. They will be putting a levy on all plastics that are sold. They're going to try and... What else are they going to do? They're going to... what's it called when you have investments in something? they have like...
They invest?
They have an endowment fund.
Oh, okay.
And it has money in fossil fuel companies and fossil fuel extraction. So they're going to take that money and they're going to put it into other companies so those companies can no longer use their money to grow. And that's a very... important and useful type of economic pressure that these big organizations
definitely.
Can have. So they're not going to have any of their money involved in these industries anymore. And there's a whole other range of like smaller things in that as well. So it's a big, they call it a Green New Deal for Goldsmiths.
That's very cool. And I think that that last example is probably the key thing that like is what we need big companies to do. Like you have to put your money where your mouth is and start making those changes, because if consumer behavior, investment behavior doesn't change, then the world isn't going to change. So, you know, there is buying and spending power in people.
Yeah, and also it's like, and I think this is really, because we've just started to try and do the same thing at Queen Mary University. We're like, Queen Mary has a sustainability team, but they obviously manage sustainability and also the interests of the college. And so the students here are starting to get together and see how we can push them to be a bit more extreme. And that's what Goldsmiths did. It was just dedicated students getting involved with their students' union, who then put pressure on Goldsmiths who have made those changes. So people say you can't do anything, you can't affect change, but that's a literal example of where, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 students at Goldsmiths have, you know, spent some time and effort, but managed to make a huge difference. Like the amount of, oh, got another thing for Goldsmiths is they're switching their entire power supply to a renewable provider.
Wow.
For example, I don't know Goldsmith statistics, Queen Mary spends about £4 to £5 million a year on electricity. So for those people have just taken probably about a similar amount of money from non-renewable electricity providers to a renewable one. And that has a huge impact.
And I've also got another update on that, actually. And this is in my quickfire round later, so I'll have to take it out. But in China, it is now cheaper. Electricity is cheaper from solar power than it is from the electricity grid.
Wow.
So, like, you know, people, you know, the investments are there. And if you, you know, it's not always an overnight solution, but if you put the investment in there, it will become cheaper and better than standard fossil fuel ways of getting energy.
Next episode.
Next episode. So if that was saving the planet, then it's got to be your one. We're heading over to Portland, Oregon, aren't we?
Hey, wow, you are so good at this.
I enjoy our podcast, Jack. I'm an avid listener.
I don't even listen. I'm like, that stuff's done. Put it on the internet, get it out of my face. It's not true. I have to listen to it many times when I edit it. So not that I edit it. It's perfect as soon as we record.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is straight out the barrel. What is it when it's on a podcast? Straight out the microphone? Straight out the lens, straight out the barrel when it's a camera.
Yeah, that's it. What if we get barrel microphones?
Yeah, maybe.
Community Matters, Reclaiming the Streets.
Share It Square.
Yes, we looked at that street or street corner in Oregon and how they kind of reclaimed the street and invited the community, started with a little tea shop and then turned it just into a whole section, which was eventually recognized by the council. And now there is like a whole bunch of these recognized street corners as public squares in Portland. So it's a way of the community saying, actually, cars, we live here, we want to use this space. Please respect that while we do our thing. So that's another one that's difficult to get information from. But since the city repair project started, they've now got 60 street paintings on different corners. 60. So where people have painted murals on those intersections to kind of reclaim them as a part of their community. There's a whole bunch more of ecological landscaping projects that have arisen out of the city repair movement. What else is there? There's another 40 plazas. It's just things have been growing from it. People are really feeling that they can take on and get involved in their community. And actually, as a result of recording that episode, I have been starting the planning for a party for my community. So my blocks where I live, the apartment blocks, there's about 200 apartments. There's a residents association, and we're looking to have some kind of party in late September, just to kind of get to know your neighbours and kind of get people out on the streets and be like, oh, okay, these are the people that live in our community.
That is very cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's very early stages. It's probably just going to be like me with a tub of yogurt and a spoon passing around. I don't want to give away the next one. What is the next episode?
I know what the next one is. This is Sarah.
Yes.
Yay. What's Sarah up to? Actually, I know. I've got my own update on Sarah.
Oh, why don't you tell me?
Everything's been going on. So
wait, first tell us who Sarah is.
Sarah, this was our Free Mum Hugs episode. This was our Pride special. So this is Sarah Cunningham, who is the founder of Free Mum Hugs, who is possibly one of the greatest people on the planet, who very generously gave us her time for that episode. She started an organization called Free Mum Hugs in America, who help LGBTQ plus youth who are abandoned by their families when they come out. So think what has been happening, apart from the fact that their visibility has exploded, three amazing things.
Oh, I know one of these.
First of all, she was in Oprah's magazine, O Magazine.
Oh.
Second thing, she... Smooth, Jack. So smooth. Second thing, she was interviewed by none other than RuPaul on RuPaul's chat show.
Yeah, well, you know, RuPaul, Neil Thornton, all big names.
Exactly. So she was on that with her son Parker, alongside Adam Lambert. And then lastly, Jamie Lee Curtis, iconic American actress, has purchased the rights to Sarah's book, and they have optioned it and are turning it into a film.
That's so cool.
It is very cool, and I'm so happy for her. It's so deserved. And
I can't wait for the section where they like have 5 minutes where she sits in a room talking to two idiots on a podcast.
Completely. I can't wait. That's going to be the main section of the film, right?
Yeah. Basically, let's form it around that podcast. I think that's the directorial angle.
We'll ask her to write like a little appendix to the book so that we can be included. but yeah, so Three Mum Hugs is just, it's going brilliantly. I think they're getting more and more chapters all over the US. And I think also the update is just from the response we had to the episode and even other mums on social media messaging to say that they loved the idea and they wanted to see what they could do in the UK for it as well. So I think that's one that's definitely been getting gooder and gooder, mm-hmm. to quote you.
The goodest.
The goodest.
That's my new religion, actually. I'm a goodest. okay, next episode... And the last one I'm going to provide an update on, because the other one went out 2 weeks ago and I don't think there's enough time to talk about
fair.
Olio. So that episode is?
Is our episode on meat alternatives, fake meat.
Yes, making a meal out of fake meat. And I really liked that in the episode, we spent a lot of time saying how we shouldn't call it fake meat. It's not an appetizing name. Maybe we should come up with a better name. And ever since we've been like, yeah, fake meat. Oh, you listen to the fake meat episode.
It's just easier.
So fake meat has exploded. Not like in a cooking sense. but like it's everywhere now. Like, so around the last episode, Burger King had announced that they were going to be putting the Impossible Burger, a burger designed to look and taste exactly like a real burger, but made from different types of plant, is it potato protein? I forget what Impossible Burger make their meats out of. So they're putting their Impossible Whopper in loads of different Burger King stores. Taco Bell in Spain has debuted a vegan meat substitute. And KFC in the UK has a vegan chicken option in some locations, mainly in Bristol. There's one in London, in Earl's Court. But the rest are in Bristol. The world's largest pork producer, Smithfield Foods, they're an American company, has just launched Bleeding Plant Meat, so their own range of vegan meats, which replicate meat as much as possible. Vegan food sales have gone up 51% in general. Meat sales have gone down 9%. More than 206 million meatless burgers were sold in America in 2019.
Wow.
To the year so far. So that's still going to go up unless everyone stops eating them, which would be weird because this podcast is very encouraging. In the UK, Morrison's has made an alternative to the BLT, the bacon, lettuce, tomato, with the CLT, the carrot, lettuce, tomato. So a carrot, lettuce, tomato sandwich.
I mean, I feel that's a lazy alternative.
I wish everyone could have seen Neil's face when he was like, carrots
I was like, I thought there was going to be something impressive, but that is not a satisfactory alternative.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's delicious.
No, it's not. It's going to be horrible. But, well, actually, do you want to talk about the burgers and stuff like that as well? Also, in the 2 weeks, 3 weeks since that episode aired, I've had two seitan burgers.
Oh, how are they?
At different places. Really good. Really good. I don't know... What am I trying to say? Like, texture-wise, I didn't necessarily feel like anything was different. And then, but flavor-wise, because there was so much, like, additional flavor in the burger, like we were saying, I think, on the episode, how a lot of the time burgers are so fancy these days, it's not actually even the meat you're tasting. So, actually, as long as you've got that kind of, that texture that fills that gap, it was really good. Really enjoyed it. Really nice brioche bun.
Just to be very clear, because I made this mistake last episode, seitan is... made from what?
Wheat.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it is okay for people who have fructan intolerances, which is me, because it is all gluten. So it's not good for people with gluten intolerances.
Like me, and yet I still eat it because it tastes good. But I was saying this at work. It's that thing of like, I don't like telling people that I'm not supposed to have gluten because a lot of the time, if you're like, I'm gluten-free, they'll swap pasta for a salad. Or pizza for a salad. And I'm like, that's not fair. I'm like, swap it for a rice dish, swap it for this. So a lot of the time I'm willing to deal with the stomach pain afterwards because I don't want to have to keep getting served a boring salad.
No, it's nice you suffer for your principles of equality for gluten-free eaters.
Exactly.
And not just you hate salads. Some salads are really delicious. I don't know why you'd... Although often they're not. Other things, Birdseye. Everyone knows Birdseye.
Yeah.
frozen food specialist. They have started a new TV campaign to encourage people to try vegan meats. Subway's.
Yeah, I was gonna say all the underground.
Subway, the sub company that sells footlongs, are selling a Beyond Meat meatball marinara at 685 locations in the US and Canada from next month. Ocado.com has in their vegan sales have gone up 51% this year, and they've added over 1,000 plant-based products. By that I mean plant-based meat alternatives, yeah. Not just like, oh, we've added a new cabbage.
Added some more vegetables. Although I don't know if we spoke about this in that episode, I'm still like, there's the meat alternative, which is fine. I can add something that is there to replicate meat. And then there's the really horrific marketing ploy in supermarkets where, like, the other day, seeing on a shelf a cauliflower steak. And I'm like, it is a cauliflower that has just been sliced lengthways so that it's like...
Yeah, cauliflower steak.
I'm just like, no. I was so offended by seeing it that I'm like... And it's also the cost. The cost of it for what is like a portion of a cauliflower. Whereas you could buy the entire cauliflower for 50% of the price and just chop it yourself.
It'd be wasteful though if you only wanted the steak.
Like,
no. Like you don't buy the whole cow just to get a...
Yeah, but then it's wasteful anyway because it comes in packaging that half of it isn't recyclable anyway. So it's just, I find that thoroughly offensive. Supermarkets, please stop selling vegetable steaks.
Marks and Spencers. And that is a recap of what is happening with our episodes to date. So really, I think originally they were good things and I think they've stayed good or got gooder.
We can't encourage gooder.
I'm gonna keep going with them.
Got more gooder. Good. No, I think that's great, and I think actually we should make this a regular thing of doing our good updates so that we can follow these projects.
Yeah, although it'd be sad if we get to one where it's like things got terribly worse.
Oh yeah, no. Well, but at the same time, then it shows that action is always needed, and we can't be complacent.
That is true. Or we can just selectively pick the facts and present them in a way where no one knows.
Oh, that's called news. Jack, have you got a timer ready?
I don't.
No, I didn't think you did. That's why I asked.
You know what I do have, though? I found a cowbell.
Jack, I'm going to kill you. Please stop hitting the cowbell.
Can I at least use it to mark the end of your 30 seconds?
Okay, fine. But get a timer first.
Okay, I have my timer. I have my cowbell.
And I have my quick fire good news round. Are we ready?
3, 2, 1.
An 8-year-old Mexican girl wins nuclear science prize for her invention, 11 million new trees to be planted in England by water companies. Why Tiny Belize is a world leader in protecting the ocean. Tiny fluorescent carbon dots could make cancer treatment safer and more effective. A stranger drove a National Guard sergeant 8 hours so he could make it home for his son's birth. An Eastern toddler denied £2.1 million gene therapy will now get it for free. Singapore aids the Philippines in its wildlife preservation. Forest management company returns 50,000 acres of land to a local tribe. 6 EU companies are... I didn't get to the one I wanted!
Oh,
I didn't get to the one I wanted.
I can't take it back. I hit the cowbell.
I should have reordered.
Why would you put the one you liked after? Like, okay.
Because I did it in the order that I found them and I didn't rearrange so that I could force you to get the one I wanted. I'm so upset. Ugh. Ugh. And you would have loved it as well.
I don't know what to say now. I feel awkward.
All right, which one do you want out of those?
Oh man, it's
out of those brilliantly happy, amazing stories.
Yeah, great. So I already know about the tree planting.
Yep.
Honestly, I think we're not doing enough. I think it's great that they're planting trees. Did you know an African country whose name I forgot? I think it was
Ethiopia.
Recently planted 300 million trees in one day.
Yeah.
We need to do that.
But hasn't it become a competition now? Because I know that I've seen a news story where another country has said that they're going to do 500 million.
Well, you know what? The previous record was India with like 108 million in one day. So it's great if it's a competition. Plant more trees.
I'm trying to pull these facts from my head because I then read an article about this like inter-country competition now to plant the most trees. And actually with the space and the amount that some countries are saying that they're going to do, the in it was something like, I don't want to say a figure because I feel like I'm going to make it up, but like there was a humongous impact in CO2 that they'll be able to reduce because of the amount of trees that they're going to plant.
Yeah, so the current projection, and this is really like awkward science because it's difficult to predict how much carbon trees take out in different environments, in different biospheres, etc. But they believe if we can plant 1 trillion trees, we can counteract like 7 years of global emissions, which is actually pretty huge. It would really buy us some time to fix the environment. And everyone's like, 1 trillion trees, that's not possible. But Ethiopia did 200 in one day. So actually, maybe we're not that far away. You know, maybe it's possible. It's only 5,000 times that.
I think it's very cool. And I just like that there's this inter-country competition, and that's the kind of thing that needs to keep happening. Now, if you could do it with reducing fossil fuel needs and competition on who gets there the fastest wins the prize, that'd be great.
One day.
Like, one day. Okay.
So the other one I'm curious about is who ends up being 8 hours away from their child's birth in the first place?
Well, he was a military sergeant, so he was based stationed somewhere else and didn't have the emergency transport to get back.
Okay.
They're always working.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
So which one are you going to pick?
I would like to know about the 8-year-old scientist girl because she won some kind of nuclear prize and I'm wondering what an 8-year-old is doing with nuclear material.
Yeah, so she wasn't playing around with nuclear material. It was a Institute for Nuclear Sciences award is okay. What she won. So yeah, this is a great story. And it actually has real echoes of the story behind the book and film on Netflix, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, which is about William Kamkwamba from Malawi, who in his village out of recycled materials built a, I think it was a solar powered wind turbine.
Lights?
And yeah, and to help them with all of their harvesting. And so, yeah, this is about an 8-year-old Mexican girl called, pronunciation, Xochitl Guadalupe Cruz.
So that was good, but pronunciation was pronounced.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Anyway, thanks, Jack. Yeah, so she basically invented a device to help low-income families. And what's crazy is obviously, yeah, she's 8 years old, but she's been competing in science fairs since she was 4.
What did she enter when she was 4?
I don't know. That was the bit I couldn't find out. That was all the news stories just said. But it's nuts. So basically, she's from a place called Chiapas, and a lot of the people there are low income, and they can't afford to pay for, like, obviously to, like, heat their water and all of those kind of like basic domestic things that cost money. So a lot of them just burned down and cut down a lot of trees. So she wanted to do something about it to stop them from doing it. So she designed and constructed a solar powered device to heat water using only recycled materials.
So are we talking like bottles, like empty plastic bottles that hit the sun hits and then...
Yeah, so she was using just anything discarded, like bottles, some wood, plastics that she had, and she created the heating device that runs on a free and ready available energy source, which is
the sun.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it's not readily available at night.
No, true. Very true, very true. Well, unless she's like going around the world and chasing it, I suppose.
That's probably not gonna reduce the emissions of burning down trees.
But still, so it not only provides hot water for the low-income families, it's also saving the trees. And she, her family helped set up the device on the roof of their house. And it obviously like creates the water for cooking and for water for bathing. She says that she still bathes quickly so that there's enough hot water left for her little brother, which is very cute and very sweet. So yeah, I think Xochitl is an amazing young girl and potentially one of the great scientist inventors of the future.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast and the recaps of all the other previous podcasts.
If you liked this episode, don't forget to rate, review, tell all of your friends, make sure you subscribe.
Yeah, but I mean, if you like this episode, it's not really representative of the other episodes. So, like, you know, if you like this episode, come back in 10 episodes' time to see another recap.
That's very true. But they wouldn't have known what we're recapping
on. Yeah, you wouldn't have the emotional relationship with the content. which is, so what ideally you would do is if you liked this episode, go re-listen to the other previous episodes and then continue listening for the next episodes until the next recap episode, and then you can truly enjoy it in all its glory.
Great. We'll see you next week. No, we won't. I don't know. I just watched British TV.